As every day, Rabbi Yisai, our limud of Sefer Chofetz Chaim is a zchus for the refuah shleima of Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, yishtav a refuah shleima b'korav b'soy shal chayla Yisrael. So in today's section, the Chofetz Chaim in Klal Yud, till now we were speaking about Loshon Hara L'Toyeles, and we said yesterday that if somebody has impure intentions, if his intentions are not 100% pure, then he's not qualified, he's disqualified from speaking Loshon Hara L'Toyeles, even if he fulfills all the seven conditions of Toyeles, but nevertheless, somebody who is himself guilty of that particular Aveira, that's what we learned yesterday. Says the Chofetz Chaim today two things. Number one, he says that similarly, to tell Loshon Hara L'Toyeles to somebody who himself has done that Aveira, as we said, if I am the one who's done the Aveira, then I can't be holier than thou and go to the Rav and say, oh, Pliny is doing this terrible Aveira, and can you do something about it? Similarly, says the Chofetz Chaim, even if I'm not guilty of that Aveira and I want to do something L'Toyeles in order to prevent someone else from continuing to do an Aveira, I can't tell the story to somebody L'Toyeles, to somebody who doesn't consider it an Aveira.
Can you tell the person himself not to do something
which... Let me tell you something, for instance.
Which you also do.
What? We said you can't.
Well, why not? Because you've got to someone say, look, I ought to talk to you sometimes.
I'm going to give you an example, right? I don't want to get involved in machloikas, about whether or not the Erev is a good Erev or not. But supposing that there's somebody who belongs to a kehillah where they do not carry in the Erev. Yeah? And I saw that person carrying in the Erev on Shabbos. And he's not supposed to. Right, let's say. He's not supposed to because his Rav doesn't allow it, etc., etc. So I want to do L'Toyeles. Yeah, I've spoken to him, I've tried to persuade him, and he's not interested. And so on and so forth, etc. In the end, I've complied with all the laws of Toyeles, and I want to go and tell a Rav who could have an influence over him that he should desist from now on carrying in the Erev. So, if I carry in the Erev, then I can't do that, says the Chofetz Chaim, because I'm disqualified, because I'm myself guilty of doing the thing. Similarly, if I go to a Rav who paskens that the Erev is kosher, then I can't go to that Rav and tell him, why don't you influence Pliny not to carry the Erev, because he belongs to a gila where they don't allow it, because he himself has gone the gila. He says, so therefore the Chofetz Chaim says, if you yourself are guilty of the Aveira, or the person who you're telling the story, and you mean the Toyeles, and you've complied with all the other rules, but if that person is not machshiv the Aveira as an Aveira, doesn't consider that the thing that person has done as anything wrong, then probably there's no point anyway in telling him, but you wouldn't be allowed to tell him, because that would be that obviously would be counterproductive. It's more likely to lead to machloikas than it is to solving the problem.
And just a general announcement, the NHS computer is completely down. If anybody is going to be affected, please let me know.
There's a worldwide IT outage is affecting
Plane. Yucky, that's not working.
Sky News.
What? Both not working.
Yeah. They've come out with the NHS.
They
come out because of that.
No. One is Cololoshin. They don't know why that's not working.
It's worldwide.
So it's a Cololoshin issue on this one.
Okay, and that one there.
What's the story on yours?
There's quite a lot in this issue, so we'll rely on this one.
There's a worldwide
okay.
IT network.
Okay, fine.
Start your day at the Torahway, Northwest London, Friday, Yud Gimel Tammuz, 19th of July. Reno Rav Meir Schindler Shlita. Parsha theme. This week's Torah is sponsored by Family Cantor, Lippa Tzimtan Assum of Shlomi Hechsha, Nereyoy, and Sarah Cantor, Shetichia. Chasna took place on Monday. Yehi Rotzen, Shivin Advice, Demom Yisrael, Hashem, Lissilo. Vilishchus, Hashvim, Vachayolim, Amnukumash, Shachsul, Vatrem, Lisholom, Bim, Heiro.
The Kololoshim might be to do with this worldwide.
Yeah.
No, it's not
fair. They might have started it. Yeah, they might have started it.
Yeah.
beginner? All done. Okay, good. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
I mean, it sounds like everything's stopped except for start your day the Torah way, so we're good.
We never close. Yes, we do. Next week is going somewhere else.
That's true. I mean, this year, my family are considering trying something different, which is to take the children camping. I did camping as a child, so I have kind of fond memories of it, but I'm still a little bit nervous. So what we did was we borrowed a tent and we pitched it in the garden to try it out first. And what I realized, and I remembered, when you walk inside the tent, and it's quite a large tent, that it almost feels like you're in a little world of your own. Everything else is going on outside, and this is almost a little microcosm of you, just inside this little tent. Now, every time we walk into a shul, we sing, we say, Matovu Ahalecha Yaakov, Mishkan Osef Yisrael, how goodly are your tents, Yaakov. And this clearly comes from this week, etc. Bilam tries to curse the people on three different occasions. And each time, the curse turns into a bracha. And on the third occasion, he uses the very famous words, Matov Alecha Yaakov Mishkan Osecha Yisrael. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Kuf Hei Amud Aleph, says that we can learn from what Bilam said what he would wanted to do. He wanted to do the opposite. He wanted to be mevatel all of the Bote Knesios and the Bote Midrashos. He wanted to stop the shuls from functioning, the study houses from functioning. And therefore, instead, Hashem turned it on its head and he said, Matovu Alecha Yaakov. So we see that the Gemara is understanding that when we're talking about the tents, what tents are we referring to? We're talking about the shuls and we're talking about the synagogues. Problem is the Gemara in Baba Basra seems to be a steerer to this. The Gemara in Baba Basra, Samach Amud Aleph, says, famously, Rashi brings it as well, what is it, Matovu Alecha Yaakov? What was it that Bilam saw that he was so startled by the Jewish people? He saw that their tents were not aligned opposite each other. And for tznius reasons, for privacy, the openings of the tent, you couldn't look out from one tent into the other. And because he saw that an effort had been made, that the homes of the Jewish people were done in a very tsanua, very, very private way, that's what instigated him to say, Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov. So what is it? The oil that we're referring to here in this week's Sedra, are they referring to the Bote Knesios and the Bote Midrashos? Or are they referring to the homes? That was a question that I had this year. I'd like to share something, next 25 minutes or so, a novel idea, just some of the thoughts that I had with regarding the understanding of what it means to be an ohel. What is the spiritual connotation or the spiritual essence of the concept of a tent? So I'd like to say that possibly there are two ways that we impact on the world. The first way is that we impose ourselves on the world. We want to generate change, we want to convince people of our arguments, we possibly inspire, we want to impact other people. And that's by going out and imposing our ideas, our aspirations, our values on other people. And then there's a second way to impact the world, and that is to be a Mayan Mizgaber, literally a fountain, a spring, a wellspring of beauty, a wellspring of values. And what we do is we change our internal world. And by doing so, we act as a role model, which then automatically has an effect on our sphere of influence on the people outside of ourselves. What is the counter, the opposite of an ohel? Anyone want to suggest?
open.
Ah, very good, excellent. A sode. A field. How do I know? How do we know? That the opposite of an oval is a field? Brilliant. Yeah, we know that when Yaakov and Esav, at the beginning of Parshas, told us they're growing up, Esav is described as an ish yodea tzayed ish sodeh, whereas Yaakov is ish tam yoshev oholim. Rav Shimon Shaphal Hirsch, by the way, explains what the two phrases of each are parallel. So the ish yodea tzayed, knowing how to hunt, that describes Esav's character. Ish sodeh describes his vocation. So similarly, Yaakov, he was Ishtam, that defines his character. He's Yoshev Oholim, that describes his vocation. So Yoshev Oholim, someone who lives and dwells in tents, is the direct opposite of an Ish Sadeh, a man in the field. What is the primary difference between Yaakov and Esav? Esav... Yeah. Esav seeks to dominate other people. He goes out hunting in the field. He's interested in trying to dominate other people and bring them into his sphere of influence, under his control. Yaakov is Yoshev Aholim. He's more interested in prioritizing his inner world to change himself. He's a Yoshev Aholim. So, this is also reflected, of course, in the statement that Yitzhak himself makes. Ka'kol kol Yaakov, by yadayim yaday Esav. What is a yad? What do hands do? Hands are the most outward part of the body. They are what tries to bring other parts which are outside of ourselves and bring them under our own dominion, under our own control. That's what we're given hands for. The kol is the complete opposite. The curl, the source of the curl of the voice is here. It's in me. But it's projected outwards. And somebody is able to hear it from very far off. But it's still here. This is where it's generated. So the difference between the Yadayim of Esav and the curl of Yaakov is the curl of Yaakov begins in the Ohel and spreads outwards. The Yadayim of Esav seek to dominate what's outside and bring them in towards him. That's the major difference between Yaakov and Esav. Of course, when we talk about Yoshev Aholim, Tarkum Unculus and Yonson Ben Uziel explain that what does it mean Yoshev Aholim? It means he was learning Torah. Beis Ulpana. Where do they get that from? How do they know? Are they saying, are they translating the word Ohel really means Ohel Shel Chochma, Ohel Shel Torah? So the Ksav Kabbalah says no. He says that is the pshat in the word Ohel. He says when we use the concept of Ohel, what is an Ohel? An Ohel is exactly that. It's a little place. It's a place where we can create our own atmosphere, and that atmosphere then goes and dissipates outwards. If you think about it, he says the word Ohel also means something else. It's a posuk in Iyov. Perek Chaf Hei, posuk Hei. Hein ad yoreach velo ya'ahil. Behold, the moon passes by and casts no light. The word ya'ahil, Ohel, also means light, means or. We know, of course, ora zu Torah. Lahidamoysa ora means, oh, we say ora zu Torah. So Ur and Ohel are comparable. Why on earth does an Ohel represent light? Because a light is exactly that. It has a source. But the source of that light has its impact in the wider world. And therefore, when we talk about the Ohel, what we're really demonstrating is that the definition of an Ohel is something that is a little microcosm, a source, usually of goodness, where its influence is felt outside of that Ohel, as opposed to the Sodeh, or the Yadayim of Esav, which is external, and Esav is trying to bring those external items, those external things, into his own sphere of influence.
But
The Ksav Kabbalah adds another thing. The term Ohel is used also once in the Torah with different vowelization. So, and what's it referring to? Sorry?
Sorry,
Ohel. Correct, but that means Ohel. But where do we find Ohel meaning something else? And it does it with a different vowelization. This is in our very Pasuk, the Pasuk afterwards in Bolok. What does it say? Matuba lecha yachem ishkeno secha Yisrael, kin cholim nitoyu kaganos ale nohor, ka'aholim nota Hashem. What does it mean over there, ka'aholim? Ahol is not the same as ohel. Ahol is they usually translate it as aloe. It's a plant, it's a herb. It's a spice. Right? So the Pasuk says, Matuba lecha yachem ishkeno secha Yisrael, good are your tents, Yaakov, your dwelling place Yisrael, Kinecholim nitoyu keganus ali nohor, stretching out like brooks, like gardens by the river, ka'aholim not Hashem, like aloes planted by Hashem. What's so significant about this spice, this plant, aloe? So the Ksav Kabbalah writes, because reichoi noidef, that means its scent travels. What is the property of the aloe plant, or in fact of any plant which contains spice? In this particular case, it has two connotations, two possibilities. Number one is reicho nodef, it gives a nice scent. I'm told that it gives it a kind of a very refreshing, awakening, fragrant scent. It also has a lot of medicinal properties as well, right? But that's all contained within the plant. We have to then extract it from the plant in order to be able to get the full usage of it. So an ahol, the plant which, and I believe the Torah is deliberately juxtaposing O'alecho and Aholim, the only place in the Torah where we see both these words together, to say that that's exactly what the Torah is trying to tell us, that what an Ohel is supposed to do is the same way as an Ahol. Is that its presence is felt here, it's developed here, but nevertheless, its wings spread outwards. Its influence spreads outwards as well. Nothing we wouldn't be complete without a little bit of halacha. Last week's sedra, we have at the beginning, of course, the halachas of tumah and tara. Now it's very interesting because most situations of tumah, how does one become tomei when one interacts directly with a source of tumah? Let's say it's a dead body, so touch it, move it, carry it, sit on it. There are certain cases of tumas heset where it's when you cause it to move indirectly. But always you're interacting with the item that is the source of the tumah. With one exception. Tumas ohel. You just have to be under the same roof as the nevela, as the dead body. And there's tumah. Why? And it has different halachas as well. So it's very beautiful. First of all, the Pasuk itself that introduces the laws, the halachas of Tumas Ohel. How does it start? Zois HaTorah, Odom Ki Yomus Ba'Ohel. What does Chazal say about Odom Ki Yomus Ba'Ohel? So even here, by the halachas of Tumah and Tara, you think it's nothing to do with anything. Nevertheless, it translates the word Ohel as Torah. First, of course, the Gemara in Brachos, Mem Gimel on the base. Omer Eish Lokish, Minayin, She'ein Divrei Torah, Miskaimin, Elo, B'misha, Meimis Atzmo, Aleo, Shenema, Odom, Kiyomus, Ba'ohel. How do I know that Torah, is only, words of Torah only stayed with a person for somebody who really kills himself over Torah? Because it says, Odom, Kiyomus, Ba'ohel. A man, when he dies in the Ohel. Or there's another Gemara. There's a Gemara in Shabbos. Shabbos, Pegim on base. Omar Rabbi Yonason, Le'olam al yimana Adom atzmo b'divrei Torah afilu b'shas misa. Person should never cease from learning Torah, even until the time of his death. How do we know? Same posuk, Odom ki yomus ba'ohel. So we see that ohel is used in even here with the hilchos of tumah tara, it's referring to Torah. Why is it that tumas ohel is different? I think the answer is everything that we've just explained. Because ohel is a concept. When there's a dead body in an ohel, in a confined space, in a tent, in a person's house, the whole ohel is compromised as a result. It contaminates the whole concept of what that ohel stands for. The ohel is a single unit which represents a beacon of light to the world. And now, because there's a presence of, unfortunately, the loss of a life inside that ohel, that compromises the whole ohel. And everything inside that ohel becomes tomei. There is actually one example of tumas ohel, which is not like this, might challenge me on it, and that is the concept of being mahahil. So if you're out and about in the field and there's a dead body there and you step over it, and you can act as the ohel, and even though you didn't touch it, you didn't interact with it, nevertheless you become tomei. So you might say, Rav Shinla, it's an exception to the rule. It kind of, doesn't that go against your whole theory? The answer is no. Because actually if you look in the Gemara in Chulin, the Ravo says over there that that type of din of ohel is not really a din of ohel, it's a din negiyah. In other words, when you step over a dead body, it's as if you touched it. And it has the halachas of tumas negiyah, not the halachas of tumas ohel. Again, not for now, but just to say that there is that difference. So when you're inside an ohel, the ohel itself represents something as in its entirety. Of course, what is the most commonly used term when we talk about ohel in the Torah? What's it referring to? The ultimate beacon of light in the world. The ohel moed. Look it up. The most times we find ohel used in the Torah is when it's always juxtaposed as ohel moed. Right, let's talk about the Mishkan. The Mishkan is the ultimate beacon of light to the world. So I want to suggest, possibly, that this helps us to understand a very strange turn of phrase that's used in Parshas Lech Lecha. Because there's only one place in the whole Torah, as far as I know, that the term ohel is used as a verb. Anyone know what the story they're referring to?
In the Sora Ba'oil.
Sorry?
In the Sora Ba'oil.
Ba'oil, no, that's a noun.
No.
That's a noun.
No, that's a... That. The answer is by Sodom. With Sodom. What does it say?
Vayehal.
Very good. Vayehal. Now, it's interesting because normally, the reason why it's a strange turn of phrase is because normally when, in many places in the Torah, it talks about people pitching their tent. It usually says Vayet Aholo. They pitch their tent. Sometimes in one place also with Yaakov, it says Toka. Okay. They pitch their tent. But here it's used as a verb. And there's a very interesting contrast between the way that Lot pitches his tent and the way that Avram pitches his tent. This is talking about when Lot and Avram were going to split. Lot decides he's going to live near Sodom, and Avram is going to go his own way. So it says, Posuk says, Avram Yosha be'eretz Kena'an. Avram dwelt in the land of Canaan. Velot Yoshab Ori HaKikar, he dwelt in the cities of the plain. Vayehal ad Sodom. Again, we translate it as, and he pitched his tent ad Sodom, until Sodom. So first of all, that itself is a strange phrase. What does it mean, ad Sodom? Just say, Vayehal bisodom. He pitched his tent in Sodom, or near Sodom. What does it mean, ad Sodom? So that the Pashas, a simple explanation of this is he had many tents, and between, the Mephoshim talk about this, and he first pitched the tents for his cattle, and they were outside Sodom, and the tents reached all the way into Sodom. Okay, that would be the simple explanation. The thing is, the contrast, when it talks about Avram, at the end of this section, just before Perek Yudalid, it says, Vayehal Avram. And Avram pitched his tent. Doesn't say where. But then it says, Vayova, and he came, Vayeshev be'Eloine Mamre asher b'Chevron, and he lived in Eloine Mamre, which was in Chevron, Vayivin Shomizbeach la'Hashem. It's in the wrong order. First you go to live in a place, and then you pitch your tent. Even I know that. I don't know much about pitching tents, but I know you have to go there first before you pitch a tent. So what does it mean, Vayel Avram, he pitched his tent, and then Vayova, he came, Vayeshev be'Eloine Mamre asher b'Chevron. So again, the Mefarshim, some of the Mefarshim explain what it means to say is he first pitched a tent hither and thither for all his different cattle, and then he came himself, he settled and pitched his own tent. That would possibly be the Poshup Shat in the Psukim. But I think actually there's something more crucial going on over here. What does it mean, Vayehal Avram, Vayovoi, Vayeshev Eloine Mamre? That perhaps what this means is that where he lived was circumstantial. The fact that he happened to be in Eloine Mamre was the convenient place at the time that would have him. But the most important thing was him was at Vayehal. Was that he was, we were talking at a time where he had a dispute between him and Lot, and it was a question of setting your value system. Sodom had a particular twisted value system. We will talk about Chachmei Sodom. The Gemara in Sanhedrin talk about how the philosophy behind Sodom was one that was completely twisted. So at this point in time, Avram has to make a statement. He has to state what his values are as opposed to what Lot's values are. Vayehal Avram. The first thing he has to do is he makes an ohel. He creates his own ohel. That's going to be his place where he's going to be able to consolidate his own values, his own moral systems, and use that as a guiding light for the world. Whereas what does Lot do? Vayehal Lot ad Sodom. He roots his value system juxtaposed to where Sodom is. He likes their values, or it seems to appeal to him, and that's where he decides that he's going to grow from. So just to finish off here. So if we go back to our original question. Our original question was, we had two Gemaras, which was Stira. Contradiction. The first Gemara in Shabbos said what? Matovu Alecha Yaakov means? Sorry? Yeah, it means the Bote Midrashos, the Bote Knessios. It means the shuls, and it means the house of study. And what Bilam was trying to do was to eradicate that. Kodesh Baruch Hu turned his words so that he blessed their Bote Midrashos, Bote Knessios. But then we also saw the Gemara in Bava Basra that seems to say the opposite. That Matovu Alecha Yaakov is referring to the houses, the homes. That they were tsanua, they weren't facing each other. There was privacy. So which is it? We asked, is it the homes? Or is it the Bote Knessios and Bote Midrashos? And I think the answer is very, very clear. They're all Ohel. Ohel, the definition of Ohel includes all three of these three things. There are three areas by which we set out our value system, our Ohel, or Ohalim. We have the basic Knesses, where we daven, how we daven, that defines who we are, what kind of person we are. We have the Beis HaMedrash. How do we daven? Are we Meimis Atzma Alecha? How do we study our Torah? That again defies our core value system. But then also don't forget, there's also the Ohel, which is the bias, that's the home. That's also an Ohel. That's a little microcosm where your own family can consolidate the values that they've learnt, culminating from the Tefillah and the Torah that one's learnt, one's davened. And again, that acts as a beacon of light going outwards. So it's understood that we all need to go out. We need to go work, we need to go socialise. We all have to do an element of Ish Sadeh. But our values outside, in the outside world, can only really flourish if we ensure that we first got our Ohel right. that we've set aside time for davening and trying to daven with kavana. We've set aside time for learning in the Beis HaMedrash. And again, try to make that focused period of time where we're able to imbue the values that the Torah has to give us. And of course, that also needs to take place in the home as well. You know, time of COVID, everything got shifted into the home, right? But the reality is that the home itself is supposed to be a little small space, just like when you climb into that tent and the outside world is hidden. It's almost out of sight. It's an opportunity to create your own little microcosm of Tov. And ultimately, when you're able to do that, it should be a bracha, that if we're able to utilize those three different situations, then Be'ezus Hashem, when we create those morals and values that we have, so every Jew and every non-Jew alike can point at our ohel and say, oh, Baruch Hashem, ma tovu alecha Yaakov, mishkenosecha Yisrael. Good job.
Okay, from there we go. From Matovi, we'll make the reverse a little bit in the Seder, and we'll go to the part where the Rebbeinu Shel Olam in the Torah Kedoshah describes Bilam's journey towards his objective to curse the Jewish nation, and there the Torah describes Vayukom Bilam Baboike Vayach Foshes Asoinoi. Bilam got up and arose in the morning and saddled his donkey. Rashi says that there's something noteworthy about the fact that he got up in the morning. And he says, Mikan she'asinu mekalkeles es hashira. He hated the Eden with such passion that it disrupted the order of things altogether. He was a wealthy man. He invoiced big time for cursing, a professional curser, and he had a fantastic income from this. Nonetheless, he had servants and slaves who could have done the job for him. Not like the King of England is going to change the oil in the roller in the morning to go off for a drive. It's something somebody else would do. But nonetheless, no, he did it himself. Which caused the Rebbeinu Shel Olam to make the following observation. Rusho, evil one, bad man, kvakot machavu movini. You got up in the morning, big deal. Avumovini, your forefather, he was before you a long time. What did he do? Shenema vayashkem avum baboike vayachfash eschamol. So what? So what? What's a schiz? It's faket. It says to me, you think you're the first one that did this, that you got up early in the morning? Avumovini got so shaychas. So Rabbi Nefim Pshisre asks this question, and he makes a moire dike heure. You think that you got up early in the morning, Avraham Avinu got there before you. So he says, Avraham Avinu, when he was instructed by the Akaideh, when it says, Vayachfash Eschamoyrei, he could have heard two messages. The reality which the Rebbeinu Shel Olam said to him was, Vaha'alaihi le'oilo, that Yitzchok is only supposed to be brought up as a sacrifice, or maybe the real thing, not just bring him onto the altar, but shecht him. Go through the entire procedure and bring your son and shecht him as a korban. Avraham Avinu could have done just that. He could have done what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam had told him, detected in the words that there was an exit clause here. And he didn't really have to shecht him. He just had to bring him up onto the altar. And no, he went all the way there and he questioned the Malach at the time, like the Medrash says, and he says to him, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam told me to bring him as a korban. Why are you stopping me now at this point? And the answer to that is here in this Rashi. And that's what Rabbi Rabbeinu was trying to point out. Mardoch, you rush Bilam, watch carefully. If Avraham Avinu, who went to do the Akaida passionately with a desire to fulfill my will and not my will as he might have been inclined to interpret it, but to actually carry out a Ma'asa Akaida and to Shechtim. And he was not successful. You know why I wasn't successful? Because I didn't want him to shecht his son. I only wanted to go as far as the point of bringing him up. But Avraham Avinu wasn't having any. He was going to go all the way because he did not want to be neuter, be inclined to touch and to interpret what I have said to him as a way would be pleasing to him, but rather he wanted to please me. And nonetheless, he was unsuccessful in doing so because I really didn't want him to shecht the son. I only wanted to bring him up on Alayla Oilu. And therefore, when he got up in the morning and he tried to be Mekayim my Rutzen, he interpreted my words according to the way that I said them and the way which was against his better instinct. Nonetheless, he was unsuccessful. So you, Bilam, who interpret my words completely the opposite, and I said to you, don't go with them. And you say, yeah, but please, I want to go. I want to curse them. I said, I don't want you to curse. Kiburchi, they're already blessed. No, but I still want to curse them because I have an inclination. I would like to get the Jews done for once and for all, good and proper. And now you think that you're going to get up in the morning with a fervor and with a passion that you're going to get rid of them. Do you really think that you're going to succeed? And that's now the new Aluch, the Mahalach and Rashi, beautiful. There was this intense hatred, and that disrupted everything, all order of things. So Rebbein Shlem said to him, Avumovini was long before you. He got up early in the morning and he tried to do that kite according to my rutzen, and he was unsuccessful because really my will was that he shouldn't shecht his child, and he wasn't able to. So you, you now that you got up in the morning in order to do something which was really your rutzen and your passion to kill the Jewish nation, do you really think that you are going to succeed? I can't under Knatsch. So there I'll tell you a Ura in the a thought of Chinuch, which is the famous Neutrikoi. Rashi says that there again, when he finally was confronted by the ass, and the ass spoke to him, I've been driving my car for a long time, and never spoke to me for many, many years now, but here, this donkey somehow started to speak to Bilam. Yeah, Adat Al Shulam this week. It's very good as a donkey can help the drushes. Chasim and he can also help the drushes. Yeah, you tried all the conversation to say to him, why did you break down on me? He'll give you. Yeah, so he said to him like this, this is Vayoyim Elof Malach Hashem. Now the Malach confronted him and he revealed himself in front of Bilam and he says, why did you hit your ass 3 times? I was the one that went out and impeded him. Therefore, that's why he stopped on the way. Ki yurat haderech lenegdi. This is an interesting verb. Ki yurat haderech lenegdi. So it's translated as, he hastened on the road against me. What is yurat? So Rashi says yurat has got a deeper meaning. It's a neutrikoin. It's a neutrika because it says, find it over here. Can't see it inside. But it says three things. Yurat is elution of Yordu or Yoru, which means it feared, Ruasu, he saw, and Notsu, went off. We call OTD in today's terms when we discuss children, which means off the derech. Who was the first one that went off the derech? The donkey. But why do children go off the derech? And this Rashi highlights it from the Medrash. Moiridike inside. Yurat is Rosh Taivas. Yoru, Roasu, Notsu. Now we take it in sequence. what the child, first of all, lives in an atmosphere of fear. There is in the house tension, a tension which tells him that religion is something that has to be performed whether you like it or not. And if you don't, you still have to do it. Get up for davening. Why are you looking inside? Why are you concentrating on davening? Hold your finger on the place. Why didn't you do well in school this week? Why did... And it's constant fear that the child comes home to waiting in fear and in constant tension. There's this anxiety that's yoro. Rosso. He sees because he comes into the street and whoa, they say, hey, you haven't got an iPhone yet? I'll show you something. Have a look over here. Rosso. This is fascinating. Come, I'll show you something. And then he sees an inviting place. All of a sudden, the people out there are so nice to him. And they're kind to him. And they're inviting to him. And he says, hey, this is a much better place to be than home. Which leads him finally to part three, which is not so. He finally has gone off the path. And that is Rimes in this Usoin, who was the first one in the history of the Torah, who was off the derech. So if you want a piremes to see that in Russia you've got the ingredients of what it takes of yoro, roaso, and finally not so. Chaps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Turn this off.